it was explained that energy was actually, in a sense, tapped from the fourth dimension and that in such a state it was constructive and intelligent and could create life in artificial tissue or plasma. Passing on into another section, which proved to be a clinic, we found a number of doctors and attendants busily engaged in various activities. These people were dressed in bright blue garb. We did not tarry long here, but as we passed through, Yuzak explained that while there is very little sickness, the same knowledge of radiant energy was also used here to treat various physical and mental disorders. A malfunctioning kidney could be restored in a matter of minutes, or if damaged, could be partially or completely regrown in a few hours. Cancer and many other so-called incurable diseases are removed or corrected in the same electronic way. It was also explained that in all cases, the patient was given a psychic diagnosis which correctly locates the true originating cause, as a psychic pressure or shock, incurred in either the present life or in some previous lifetime. Extended psychosomatics. Mental disorders, while rare, yield quickly to this treatment which quickly removes or rectifies these malformed vortices, or thought wave patterns which have been incurred in the subconscious or psychic body. There are no jails or prisons, crime is considered a mental disorder and treated thusly. Such treatment is kept secret and not exploited as we do, therefore there is no deflation of the ego. There is no pain or shock or lengthy doctoring. Usually the patient is home in a matter of hours. But here again we have come to another section. In the rear of this great building, upon entering, I am again impressed with a tremendous array of strange and unusual looking apparatus. I have visited laboratories, but nothing like this. Going over to the side wall where there is a row of small glass tanks, something like aquariums, I noted that over and around each one is a tremendous array of tubes, pumps, cables, etc. Looking closely into the tank, I see a yellowish cloudy liquid with something in the center which looks like a baby. Recovering from my surprise and shock, I was assured by Yuzak that it was a baby. He went on to say that their science had advanced to such a point that this laboratory development was possible under conditions similar to those of natural growth in the womb of the mother. There is first grown a capillary system from two main tubes spaced about a foot apart, a web of tiny tubes form. These in turn unit in the center and form a structure similar to that found in the body. This structure is grown in this aquarium-like tank in a plasmic-like liquid under radiant energies. After the capillary web is formed, a membranous tissue grows overall. This is the artificial placenta. The ovum from the mother is then attached and inseminated with the father's spermatozoa. From then on, the fetus grows in a normal way, being attached to the placenta with the umbilical cord supplied with the natural blood supply, which actually, in part, comes from the mother. Under these controlled conditions, the natural incubation period may be reduced by one half. The blood supply is constantly refreshed and purified from a central blood bank or with such similar Rh factors. View of a portion of one of the Martian laboratories which serve as an artificial gestation period to bring a baby into existence when natural birth is impossible. Nirel further explained that this laboratory process was only taken advantage of by those women who could not ordinarily bear a child or where there were other insufficient reasons for so doing. Passing through this laboratory, the guide went further into the problems of birth control and sex. He stated that children are limited to usually two to a family so as to prevent overcrowding and a lessening of an advanced family relationship. The ratio of births is usually determined by the death rate average. Sex relations are very sacred and considered a great creative gift. There are none of the usual sexual stimulants, such as advertising, spiced heavy foods, etc., which tend to overexcite the people of Earth. Consequently, sex assumes its rightful place in the life of the Martians. These people have a basic spiritual concept which teaches them from birth the importance of love of one another and finding their greatest joys of life in doing for each other, not doing each other. I did not see any of our familiar churches and steeples. It was explained to me that there are none. Worship is not a pagan like bowing down to some mythical god, or gods, but a twice daily observance to the great infinite creative course, and there is a once weekly community observance giving thanks to this source. Other spiritual aspects of Martian life include communications with those who have passed into the spirit world. In fact, every Martian considers his spirit friends and relatives a part of his daily life. No doubt the Chinese have derived their ancestor worship from this source. The Martians have also developed reincarnation to a point where it forms an integral part of their lives. They plan for a future time when they will again relive a new life among old friends and relatives. Many children frequently identify themselves as former loved ones. I was tremendously impressed and overawed by all that I had just seen, when, passing out of the building, we entered the courtyard or foyer to the central section, which is a large community stage and theater. Sitting there to rest, my guide went on to further explain some of these fascinating facets of life in these cities. He was still talking of children, and said that soon after the birth of a child, all the potential mental faculties and quotients were determined by an electronic diagnosis, and any criminal or negative characteristics were removed by the radiant energy process. The child was further conditioned against such recurrence. There are no public schools. The child is taught to a large extent in his sleep by a Z-ray which imparts the lessons or knowledge directly into his subconscious mind. This ray can be likened somewhat to a radio frequency which carries the spoken word yet is inaudible to the ear. In this case, however, it is received and stored for use in the child's mind. Usually a child will have the equivalent to a college education by the time he has reached the age of 10. Such schooling is done to bring out the best points of character and to especially train him in whatever vocation he is best suited for. As I listened to the soft accented voice of my Martian friend, my mind inadvertently began to recall and compare scenes of my Earth life with the simple quiet way I was just beginning to glimpse and understand. Things like the roaring streets and highways, the stench and smell of thousands of cars, of hate and greed and avarice. Nirel caught my thoughts and for a moment stopped speaking. A slow smile lifted the corners of his mouth and his eyes began to twinkle. "No," he said, "these people would not migrate to the Earth. First they would have to become accustomed to the difference in air pressure, and if this were done suddenly it might be very dangerous, like a diver going down beneath the water too quickly." He paused a moment then continued. "Then there would be deadly disease germs and the many viruses that we hear on Mars, not having had such things for thousands of years, have lost our resistance to." I could see his point, but I wondered a bit as to how they knew so much about the Earth. But patiently he explained that there were semi-surface observatories with electronic telescopes as well as a variety of radio and radar-like devices which gave them a very good idea of what went on there. Besides, some of the more advanced scientists were masters at astral flight. Even an ordinary citizen of Mars was quite adept at mental telepathy, and this type of communication was used as much as speech. But I was curious about the large theater which was confronting me. However, I waited until the explanation came that this was the large central theater or community playhouse. Here the various plays, pageants, and observances took place. There were also many civic orchestras, and various kinds of folk dances were given here. Many of these customs are of ancient origin and the meaning of some has almost been lost in antiquity. I was privileged to see part of a spring festival. Here on the great central stage several hundred children were gathered in large circles and decorated profusely with flower garlands. In the center was the Queen of Spring. The children were all moving slowly to and fro and chanting a slow sing-song rhythm. It was all very beautiful and color. Going back into the ring-shaped building, we emerged into what were some of the chambers used for judging or administrative phases. The government is a very simple form. I was amazed when told there are no written laws. Each citizen lives under a simple understanding of unwritten code. It was a very reasonable facsimile, if not the actual golden rule. In other words, do for others first. If a person acts selfishly, or begins to steal or shows symptoms of anger, he is considered ill and treatment is quickly administered. Each five families have a group leader or Ikla, as he is called. He represents this group and is responsible for their general welfare. The judges or heads of different departments are chosen on their merit, and it is usually done through elimination examinations, which require a lifetime of special training. There are no political systems. Brains and character alone determine a candidate's fitness for an office. Male and female are regarded as equal and with no discrimination shown. There are no old age institutions in these Martian cities. Great respect is shown the aged, and they live with their children until the time of passing. No doubt the Chinese on the Earth brought this custom of respect and venerance down through the ages from their Martian ancestors. Passing along through a hallway, we again emerged into what I immediately gathered to be a library. Here a number of persons were busily engaged in sorting and caring for a large variety of books, if they can be compared to ours. These were for the most part rather ancient scroll-like volumes, but there were others which resembled somewhat our own bound volumes. I was told that this library was kept mostly for research and for historical reasons, as comparatively little reading or writing is done in our usual manner. Most records are kept in memory machines or some other unfamiliar electronic device. The alphabet consists of a number of cryptograms. I did not linger long enough, however, to go into things of this nature in detail. Another thing that did impress me was the wide variety of pictures and objects of art which were everywhere. These people are exceedingly artistic, and almost everyone spends some time at his particular chosen expression decorating screens, ceramics, furniture, etc. All were given some treatment whenever opportunity presented. It was all in very good taste, however, and most pleasing to the eye. These traits are quite evident in our modern Chinese. Going through several of these offices, we again emerged into the open air. Before us was one of the larger radial streets. Coming down this street was what looked like a silver gondola of some sort, suspended from an overhead rail. Going closer to examine this strange craft, I found that it was about 20 feet long. It had 6 or 8 bucket-like seats. There is a rather elaborate system of control used. All is done, of course, electronically. There is an eye on each end to keep it spaced a reasonable distance from other cars. Gyroscopes are used to prevent sway, and it is powered by a motor in each flanged wheel, which rides a single rail, suspended at short intervals by metal standards. These cars are stopped with a single blast of a noiseless supersonic whistle and started after the passengers sit down. A number of the main radial streets have this monorail shuttle car system. Others used moving sidewalks, somewhat similar to escalators. Inside the tubes, which are the Martian cities, are these little shuttle cars, used for transportation. At this point my inspection of these very interesting monorail cars was interrupted by what appeared to be a gay group of people going into one of the nearby homes. As they disappeared, laughing and chatting through the doorway, I turned and looked inquiringly at Narelle. He smiled as he informed me there was a marriage going on. He went on to explain that marriage is very sacred here. Very rarely is there a separation or divorce. As children, couples are selected according to their mental quotient and their compatibility. Further work in preparation is done until the time when they are actually joined marriage, usually around the age of 12 or 15, as compared to our years. These marriage ceremonies last for about 3 days. The first day is spent in the exchanging of gifts between the respective families. The second day is devoted to /mind projection /and various semi-secret preparations. The whole affair climaxes on the evening of the third day with a banquet. Sitting on opposite sides of a long low table, the close relatives of the bride and groom eat a silent meal, not glancing up or looking across the table during the entire time. This silence is broken by the two fathers, or in the case of their absence, the mothers can substitute by the sharing of a cup made from the juices of certain fruits. After this, the cup is passed around and the whole thing ends up with several hours of merrymaking. Then a parade takes the newlyweds to their new home. But to return to the subject of transportation, it seems that these people do not travel much, as compared to our Earth people. There is, of course, considerable intercity travel over the monorail car system which I saw in the tube. There is, however, a kind of communication which renders a great deal of travel unnecessary. This is a form of telephone, or televue as it could more properly be called. Besides conversing, each party can see the other one through a small screen similar to our television. This, of course, can be shut off by manipulating a button, in the event there is a need for privacy. Speaking of television, their system is far more advanced than ours. The screen is built into the wall of the room and is about 4 by 5 foot square. All programs are in three-dimensional color, very lifelike and natural. Such programs are, of course, the very highest type. As there is only one channel to a city, all program material is produced and telecast by the people themselves, since there is no advertising or sex intimations but only such things as the festivals, lectures, various stage presentations or musicals which take place in the central theater. Little or no news is broadcast and then only that which is of a nature which would not cause fear or restlessness. Music plays an important part in life here. Most of the instruments are of the string type and are usually plucked. There are some reed or flute-like instruments which help give variety. There are none of the heavy percussive type which form a large part of our modern orchestras. The music itself is, for the most part, a quaint sing-song-like rhythm or chant which usually depicts some story or moral lesson, or even historical events are portrayed. Considerable color is used in the stage presentations, which gives much added charm as the innumerable color combinations rise and fall with the rhythm of the chant. Since my initial trip, I have returned to Mars several times and have learned much more about this fascinating civilization. To those who are proponents and ardent supporters of our free enterprise system, let it be said that they have a great shock coming to them. On Mars there is no dog-eat-dog competition such as we, on Earth, are so familiar with. Everyone works for the government because the government is the people. This highly developed socialistic system is not to be confused with any so-called communistic governments on Earth. The Martians never break laws, consequently there are no laws. They have long ago eliminated legislative bodies. How different here! We have a huge and vast intricate network of legislative bodies, as well as various branches of law enforcement. The average American has many thousands of laws to obey. The great majority of the people are either knowingly or unknowingly at breaking laws. As fast as a way is found to circumvent one law, a new one is passed to prevent this. The modern Chinese have placed a great deal of personal value on face. They would rather die than lose face. This sense of personal integrity was brought down through the ages from their Martian ancestors. The average Martian has an advanced state of conscious personal integrity. This eliminates the ponderous and very expensive system of government to which we are accustomed. There is in consequence a vastly simplified way of life. There are no taxes, as this land is run like a highly ordered non-profit business. The various departmental or executive heads are all highly trained specialists and hold their positions because of ability and integrity. Another thing which some Earth people would miss on Mars is money. They actually use no money. Therefore, there is no banking system. The citizen of Mars is, in a sense, his own bank and his medium of exchange is his honesty, his credit. Everyone works. There are no loafers or unemployed. They all take great pride in their vocation. Work is not done for personal gain nor selfish reasons. There is on Mars no sense of insecurity, for all are provided for, including the aged and the incompetent. A working person is provided with a metal plate where on are stamped his, or her, name and an identifying number. This plate is used in the large automat-like dispensers which I was shown on the lower floor level. When a person desires food, clothing, or whatever the need, he merely inserts this charge A plate, if I can call it such, and withdraws it, along with the article. As he is a very honest person, he never gets more than he needs or is entitled to. This is done strictly on his own personal sense of honor and integrity. As he has no sense of insecurity, he never hoards or takes more than he requires. We can imagine what would happen if our great hordes of dishonest, grasping, selfish people were turned loose in the Martian cities. There are none of the conveyor belt line techniques that we use here. Although they are very advanced in science, electronics and machinery, yet there are a great many handmade products. They realize that a vast productive system would only defeat their way of life. The more a man works, the more he can take home, so if a machine takes his place, he has nothing. An article is valued only for its usefulness and not for the profit it might bring. There is some semi-private enterprise. In case a person makes some product in his spare time, he may open a booth where it is displayed. All such enterprises operate on a barter exchange system. As there are no profits, these private exchanges consequently are not running in competition with any other. I have gone to some length in trying to point out and explain what is very obviously a superior way of life. We Americans have for a long time prided ourselves as having the best way of life on Earth. This is quite true as far as Earth is concerned, but not in a broad unlimited view. As Einstein once said, "We are never fools until we quit seeking." In our present democratic system, which is actually capitalistic, we have long passed the point of diminishing returns. A government should be of the people, and we should not lose this goal in our haste for profits. The average citizen of the earth has a state of existence something like a whipped circus animal. Yes, it is quite true that we have a higher level of life than many other countries, but what a price we are paying for this! And couldn't we get something better if we tried? But back to our Martian friends. From childhood they are taught to be useful and productive. Because of their simplified living habits, they have more time for self-improvement and for developing new types of plastics, textiles, etc. They usually limit their meals to only 2 a day, and even those are very simple, consisting primarily of vegetables and fruits, with some synthetic foods. The Martians are not meat eaters, partly for the reason that animal life has largely passed from existence on Mars, with the exception of mutants and the few obscure species previously mentioned, and these are inedible. The Martian has learned how to grow, and also to synthesize many species and to produce artificially, many protein foods. Many nuts, some of which look somewhat like peanuts, are raised. A large nut similar to a pecan is grown on vines. There is a vegetable something like a cross between cabbage and lettuce, the leaves being 3/4 of an inch thick and about 1 foot wide. It is light green in color and very nourishing. Another common vegetable looks like our onion, but has large, flat, flared leaves. The people produce artificial sunlight in huge tubes so they can grow foods in their underground cities. Space is not too plentiful. There are some dwarf trees, 3 to 4 feet high, with a fruit that looks like an orange but has meat like that of an apple, is red-skinned and sweet. It is called situ. Some other vegetables are grown in troughs in long rows. These look like huge mushrooms and have a delicious meat. Martians are closely connected with the Venusians through thought transference or mental telepathy. At one time, interplanetary travel was used, but these spacecraft are at present stored in huge underground hangars, and are being held in readiness for any emergency, such as a sudden mass evacuation of the population should any unexpected need arise. Uzak explained that the science of interplanetary travel was something very difficult for Earthman to understand, in as much as the people and the craft itself would, in taking off, actually change the rate of vibration of their own and the craft's atomic structure. Thus they would in essence become weightless and temporarily free of various usual forces such as gravitation, inertia, etc. This is something like preconditioning for firewalking, which is still practiced in different parts of the globe. My guide went on to explain that this science of changing the atomic vibration rates is a very advanced one, and that if the Earthmen would learn this, it would remove all the present-day obstructions and barriers such as materials, fuel, pressures and the hundreds of other hindrances to present-day space travel. At present their experiments have progressed to a point where a man's body can be changed into electrical energies, sent over a radar beam and then changed back to the original state, all in a matter of a split second, and with no pain nor discomfort to the individual. This no doubt sounds fantastic, but remember that this same thing is being done here frequently, from the spirit side of life. The memoirs of Sir William Crookes give an example of this in his experience with Katie, who materialized after being dead for several years. She was so real that he embraced and kissed her. Afterward, he said she was as real as his living wife. Nowadays, it is only the ignorant man who scoffs at any new ideas, and no doubt there will be those who will be unable to believe these truths, but it does not matter, since that still does not alter the facts. Just 50 years ago, they were laughing at the Wright brothers, and think of what has been invented and improved and brought into use since that time. No less so in the future. The things of science which are commonplace in the Martian way of life could well become a part of ours in some future day. I was informed that the Martians understand what is happening to the Earth people and its veritable rat race, and they are very desirous of aiding through mental telepathy to inspire as many of the Earthians as are receptive to their ways for the advancement of mankind and the improvement of conditions on this planet, and within man himself. Until man realizes the great overbalance on the material side and gains the necessary spiritual knowledge, we cannot hope to be harmonious with the other more advanced planets. They say that it is realized only too well that they must not interfere with the evolution or progress of man on Earth to any great extent, for it would not be in keeping with God's immutable law of individual soul progress. The scientists of Mars have informed me that our telescopes, in the photographing process, are subject to error and do not get refraction but /in/fraction. Sometimes the light rays, or vibrations as they are more properly called, are at times subjected to distortions, or bendings, in their flight through space, due to the proximity of some other planetary body. Because of the conjunction of magnetic lines of force, the astronomer does not always get a true picture of what he thinks he is seeing. Also, the planet Mars, on the outside of its surface, has a tremendously charged shell. While it is invisible to the eye, this can cause great distortions in light ray frequencies. And so the time has come, at least for the present, to return to our more familiar planet Earth, and I do so reluctantly, for there are still many more facets of life on, rather in, Mars of which I have only a slight understanding. I would like to learn more of their various customs, celebrations and observances. Obviously, it cannot all be taken in during only a few trips. I cannot recall a single instance of this most fascinating and interesting experience of my visits to Mars without a deep feeling of awe, reverence and gratitude to this very fine person who calls himself Nirel for giving so unselfishly of his time and efforts in explaining so many things about the planet, its people, manners, etc. But the most important part he is playing, along with many others on their planet, for all have this one thing in common, is to present the plea for man to heed their warnings and put the use of atomic energy to constructive use, instead of in bombs. For through their ability of clairvoyance and mental telepathy, they can see what is happening, and are tremendously concerned regarding their own planets. For anyone who understands even the slightest degree regarding the fourth dimension, can't help but realize that the destruction caused by the explosions and other results on the physical plane are indeed a very small part of the upheaval which takes place in the higher realms of existence, and even on the other planets. When throwing a pebble into a pool, we can only see the ripples with the physical eyes. But still down, on and on, goes the stone regardless of whether we see it or not. The men on other planets are pleading for their own sake as well as ours for us to cease this nonsensical destructive thing that can only lead to tremendous repercussions in the ethers, even to a far greater degree than in the material or physical way. There is also a grave concern by these people about our destructive downhill way of life. We are creating and breeding a race of psychopathic misfits in our highly specialized, mechanical world. The people are becoming robots. They cannot sleep for nightmares from fear and insecurity. Their days are an endless succession of almost frantic scurrying, or worse, a robot-like existence of work, sleep, and work. On every hand, flagrant psychological and sexual stimulants are used for advertisements. Suggestion is used to hammer home these cheap and malicious messages until the brain becomes numb and neurotic. Exploitation of the masses has become a highly specialized science, ruthless and cold-blooded, running the gamut from charity to vice. On the other hand, there are almost equally frantic attempts being made by various religious groups, churches, individuals, etc., to portray in some way to the great masses the grave dangers confronting them. These efforts are pitifully small and weak. Moreover, these efforts are not above suspicion, for there are, here as elsewhere, many charlatans.